This is Lifemint.com and you're listening to the Editor's Podcast with Ajay Vaishnav and Mint Editor R. Sukumar.
The biggest story of the week, SoftBank investment in Flipkart.
Yeah, one of the big stories of the week because it's been a big week. This was anticipated, although no one thought it would happen so soon. So just a bit of context here. SoftBank invested a few years ago in a company called Jasper, which runs Snapdeal. Snapdeal, as we all know, hasn't been doing too well. It's probably the biggest loser from the huge fight between Flipkart and Amazon. It's got edged out of the market. So initially, the thinking was that Snapdeal would merge with Flipkart, and then through this merger, SoftBank would pick up a little bit of stake in Flipkart, and then in addition, they would put in some fresh money into fresh equity into Flipkart, also buy out some equity from Tiger, which is Flipkart's biggest investor, and things like that. Merger between Snapdeal and Flipkart didn't happen, and that news broke only last week. So rather quickly, I think SoftBank has moved to Plan B, which is a direct investment in Flipkart, and a secondary, which means purchase from existing shareholders. It's bought out shares from almost most of the existing shareholders, or at least most of the older existing shareholders, and I'm told even the promoters. The purchase from many of the others has been small. It's bought a significant number of shares from Tiger. So in some ways, one of the biggest beneficiaries of this deal is Tiger, which has invested up to $1 billion in Flipkart. So Snapdeal's overall investment, if you can call it that, is around $2.6 billion. And out of this, around $1.4 is a fresh investment, and around $1.2 is purchase of shares from Tiger and the other investors. So a significant amount of this has gone to Tiger. Exact math, you'll never be able to work out unless the company chooses to share it with us. But I think Tiger might have come close to recouping its entire original investment in Flipkart, and it still has a significant stake, right? So now the two biggest shareholders in Flipkart are Tiger and SoftBank. And these are two companies, interestingly enough, with very, very diverse styles of managing their investee companies. SoftBank, by and large, and I know there have been one or two exceptions, but by and large, SoftBank's style is to be on the board, but not get involved operationally. They do not run the company. Tiger, on the other hand, especially in the case of Flipkart, has been extremely hands-on, to the extent that the person now running Flipkart is a former Tiger executive. And I think that's a very differing style. So it will be very interesting to see what this deal does to the way Flipkart is managed. We had this article a few weeks back. Yeah. When the investment by SoftBank was originally talked about. And we asked whether the Bunsells, who founded the company, would play a much more prominent role in the company going forward. And I think you may see that happening, right? But already there are some hints to that effect. The second interesting angle in this is the entire SoftBank angle. Right. I mean, this is a company, some of whose initial investments in India may not have gone too well. But what it has really done, and I know this may sound uncharitable, but what it has really done is buy its way out of trouble. Because when you have, and this is through the SoftBank Vision Fund, which is the vehicle through which almost all the company's investments will now come. The SoftBank Vision Fund is almost $100 billion fund. It's the biggest venture capital fund raised in the world. And when you have that much money, you can actually go out and literally buy your way out of trouble. In doing this, they've also bought Tiger's way out of trouble, because I think Tiger was under some pressure. Since late 2015, Tiger has not been making any huge fresh investments in India. And I think they probably wanted to see some return on at least some of their big original investments. And this is just that. It's a big return on an original investment that they've got. So I have a feeling you will see Tiger becoming a little more active days ahead. It's interesting to see what this means from the competitive perspective as well. Because what does it do to Flipkart? Suddenly now, with the money that it raised a few months ago from Tencent and Microsoft and some of the other investors and eBay, and the money that it has now raised, Flipkart, and they announced it yesterday, has $4 billion of cash. It's $4 billion that it can use to compete with Amazon, which means Amazon will now have to make bigger investments. I'm actually expecting an announcement today or early next week, right? I mean, because last time around, that's exactly how it happened. Flipkart announced a huge fund, and then Amazon said, okay, I see your $1 billion and I raise you $2 billion. This time around, Flipkart has said, okay, I've got $4 billion. Will Jeff Bezos now say, okay, I see your $4 billion and I raise you $8 billion? So I don't know whether that is going to happen. But for people like us, and I don't mean people like us from the business journalist point of view, people like us from the consumer point of view, I think it's brilliant. Yeah. Because I think the discounts will continue for some more time. These companies, both of them, will probably find newer excuses to give to do a sale almost every month. So I think it's good for consumers. I think it's broadly good for merchants or the people who sell on these platforms. I'm not so sure it's extremely good for these companies themselves, because at some point in time, they'll have to turn profitable. But that's a question they'll have to address going forward. Right now, you have Flipkart with a huge war chest, and I would be surprised if they didn't use that war chest to good effect, because over the last year and a half, this is a company that saw a dip, clawed its way back, had difficulty raising money, raised some money at a slightly lower valuation a few months back, and has now gone out, and as part of that same round, because they announced that the money raised yesterday was part of the same round, which I'm assuming to mean that it was raised at the same valuation of 11.5 billion, has gone out and raised a lot more money. So suddenly it's a resurgent Flipkart. Amazon has continued to march like it does almost in any country in which it's present in the world. So it's going to be interesting in the days ahead. And of course, there's the dark horse, which is really Alibaba, right? And everyone's been speaking about what will Alibaba do now. And Alibaba and Paytm are sort of joined at the hip. Interestingly, SoftBank has a huge investment in Paytm also. And you will see that increasingly beginning to happen, right? It's consolidation at one level, but also at another level. Like I said, you have $100 billion. You can actually invest in all the horses in the race, yeah, right? I mean, and then play your probabilities and your hedges and other things and make sure that you come out on the winning side. And hopefully, which is the whole premise of venture capital or risk capital, and hopefully the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow will be worth all this jockeying and all these other things that you're doing.
The next big story is cess on luxury cars, which has been increased to 25% from 15%, and this is above GST tax of 28%. So what is the future of luxury cars? And we also had an interview with Mercedes-Benz CEO.
Yeah, Roland Folger,
looked concerned.
He wasn't concerned. He was extremely critical, and he was very articulate. Normally, CEOs don't say bad things about the government. He was extremely critical of what had happened. But see, let's look at it at multiple levels, right? It's very difficult philosophically, right? I mean, and I'm now speaking, let's forget there's this animal called GST, let's forget all these. But it's very difficult philosophically, sitting where we are, for that matter, any analyst in this country, to argue against higher taxes for luxury vehicles, luxury products, sin products like cigarettes, liquor, things like that. It's very difficult to argue against that, because philosophically there's good reason why these things should be charged high. Let's take luxury vehicles for instance. The people who buy these vehicles are not going to be put off by this tax from buying these vehicles. They'll still go out and buy these vehicles. Yes. It's not going to stop them. So, but let's leave that aside. Just like the people who smoke cigarettes, like many of our colleagues in this office, are not going to stop smoking just because the prices of cigarettes go up. That's at one level. But at another level, this decision, I feel, is not really a fair decision, simply because GST was meant to be a simplifying tax. You spent a lot of time and you came up with some slabs. And then you saw that the prices of SUVs had come down after the tax, which everyone knew from the beginning. We ourselves have written extensively about it. That's the new tax, right? When you simplify things, some things will come down, some things will go up. That's the way things work. But for the government to look at that post facto, after the event, after a month has passed, and I was just looking at my mail as I walked in, last month, sales of SUVs went up 36%. I don't have the number for luxury cars. I'll have to look at that. But I'm sure sales of luxury cars also went up marginally. And these are not, it's not as if people, you don't drive a luxury car, I don't drive a luxury car. We are not going to go and buy one. So whether the tax is high or low or a dip in tax is not going to make us buy. But what really happened was, I have a feeling that people were thinking of buying it in the second half of the year, would have brought their purchases forward and things like that, right? I mean, or you're almost decided to buy it and this is the last thing, incentive that you need to buy it. So a lot of these purchases happened last month, right? In the month of July. You can't look at that increased sales. You can't look at the fact that the prices have come down and say, hey, luxury cars now cost less. SUVs now cost less. Let's raise the tax. That's not fair, right? I mean, you should have thought of it before, right? I mean, so why would you want to go out and do that? And business doesn't work that way, right? You take a decision which is supposed to bring about some certainty in things. You can't keep changing those decisions. So from that perspective, what the government plans to do, because right now it's still a plan, right? I mean, there's a recommendation, they will do it, or actually it's not a plan. It's a decision that's been taken, especially, but we don't know the time frame of the decision. We don't know when it's going to be implemented. And it's not, I personally think, sends out all the wrong signals, especially because GST was supposed to be one of those stable things that would put an end to exactly these kind of things.
And not just Mercedes, even Maruti Suzuki today said that there should be more policy consistency.
Sure, but I would take that with a pinch of salt, because one of the big beneficiaries of this is actually Maruti, right? I mean, the fact that these longer and bigger and luxurious cars are actually being taxed more is actually good for companies like Maruti, but I agree with their sentiment. There should be more certitude in policy. There should be more stability in policy. You can't keep changing it, especially when it comes to taxes, right? I mean, and in this case, it was unfortunate. Now, interestingly enough, and I started my answer off by talking about cigarettes. The same thing happened in the case of cigarettes.
Yeah.
But cigarettes, we have no problems, right? Cigarettes kill people. We all know that, right? I mean, I'm sorry. I know the tobacco companies will be upset about this, but they do. So there is a sin tax, and the government knows this. So the government noticed after GST that the prices of cigarettes had come down. So it made sure that the prices went up, right? Or stayed at almost the same level as it had before GST. No one has a problem with that, right? But cars, SUVs, luxury vehicles, I don't think it makes sense.
Moving on to the next topic, SEBI has cracked the whip on 331 listed companies which are suspected to be shell companies.
Insolvency proceedings were initiated. It's very messy. Yeah. Okay, and I'll tell you why it's messy. It's messy because SEBI's had this list for some time, right? And then it decides to act on this. Now, if you have a list for some time and you decide to act on it, you should know about these companies, right? You can't just send out a notice to these companies saying, okay, you're shell companies, we're taking this action against you. Are all of them shell companies? It turns out some of them are not. One of them is building part of the Mumbai Metro, right? Some of them have very prominent promoters. Of course, you can have prominent promoters and still be a shell company, but some of them have prominent promoters. Some of them are Indian arms of multinationals with proper businesses. Many of them are tax-paying companies. Now, the interesting thing about all shell companies is they all stick to the rules and other things. But still, these are all red flags, which should tell someone in authority, either the Ministry of Corporate Affairs, which was the originator of this list. Of course, the Ministry of Corporate Affairs has a much bigger list. And then SEBI, which looked at the list and then acted against it. These must have been red flags that told them, listen, let's check about these companies. And then if you're going to take action against companies, give them an opportunity. Right? Call them up. Tell them, listen, we have reason to believe you're a shell company. Come to us with documentary proof and other things and everything else to prove to us that you're not. And I'm sure many of these companies would have done it, the genuine companies. As it turns out, these companies have now approached the Securities Appellate Tribunal. And the whole thing is under a cloud. And what happened in the meanwhile? You caused tremendous volatility in the market. Of course, it was volatility which was further compounded later on by what happened between President Trump and North Korea, right? So the markets have been very, very volatile, very rocky the last few days, sessions of trading. I'm told that the volatility index of VIX is now at a 5-month high. Policy-wise, there was no reason for SEBI to do what it did. I know it's good for a regulator to sometimes behave like a cowboy, right? I mean, but there should be no collateral damage. You have to make sure that you're going after the bad guys. You can't just gun down an entire village to catch an outlaw, right? I mean, that's not how you do things.
So can we say that SEBI's policies are inconsistent?
No, I don't think we can say it's inconsistency. I think SEBI's motives are genuine. You can't question the motives. They want to protect the small investor. They want to make sure there's no money laundering. All that is fine. But you can't get in the way of legitimate business, right? I mean, you look at some of these companies, they are proper tax filing, law abiding companies engaged in honest and genuine business. And you're suddenly turning around and telling them, hey, you're a shell company. Not done. You could have avoided this by a proper investigative process, actually getting in touch with the companies and giving them a chance to respond. So I don't want to use I don't want to use terms like inconsistent, right? I think it was this is one of those good policies, well-intentioned policies, well-intentioned moves, completely botched up by the fact the regulator didn't do its homework.
Yeah.
Right? So at the operational and the implementation level, I would give them 0. When it comes to motives, I would probably give them a 10 on 10.
And RBI has paid less dividend to the government. How will it affect their plans?
How will it affect the government's plans? Yeah. The government expected around 75,000 odd crores from RBI as well as the public sector banks. Most of the public sector banks are in bad shape. They're not going to be paying too much of a dividend. RBI, I think there's been some back of the envelope calculations that various people have done, which expected that RBI's payment out of the 75,000 crores would have been anything between 55,000 crores and 60,000 crores, which is a significant amount. Now it's paid around 30,000 crores. Yeah. So it's a huge shortfall. So the government's fiscal math obviously comes under question. Why did this happen? Demonetization. Because when you have surplus cash in the system, the RBI has to suck it out in some ways. Otherwise, it's not good to have cash floating around in the system. And that process, which is a reverse repo operation, as it is called, where the RBI borrows money from banks, so to say, costs some money. The fact that you had to print notes after demonetization cost money. That's one issue. I think it's also important to look at it historically. And we haven't done this yet, right? But it's something that we should be doing. RBI hasn't always transferred its entire surplus to the government, right? I mean, how do you build a surplus? You build a surplus by keeping part of it with yourself, right? And I think that's how they built the surplus. I think it's only over the last 3-4 years that they started doing this primarily in an effort to help the government with its fiscal math and everything. Nothing wrong in it. So maybe RBI has also restarted that process of keeping some of it back. Little unlikely, I would think, but it's still one angle that needs to be explored, right? To see what happens. But this is definitely, the way I look at it, disrupts the government's calculations. It is a significant shortfall because anyway, we know that the huge estimates that they've got for money that they'll get from spectrum and other things, and then the deferred payments that companies had to make, that's been pushed back a little bit. So there'll be a shortfall in that for sure. Divestment, they've never met their targets in terms of how much they expect to raise. So you put all of these together, the dividend, the telecom thing, and the fact that you're not going to end up, no government has actually met its divestment target in this country, right? I mean, never really happens. Every year they have a target which is very ambitious, which is very good, but doesn't happen. So there is going to be some stress on the fiscal thing. But does it worry me? Not too much, right? Because our external sector, as it's called, is reasonably healthy. Our concerns are not macroeconomic. Right. I mean, at this point in time, India doesn't need to worry about its macroeconomic health and strength and all that. Reasonably good. Extremely good, actually. You know, especially when you look at it relatively, it's pretty good. There are a lot of microeconomic issues, but we could spend an entire session next week talking about that.
Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at Livemint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook.